Welcome to episode 549, and tonight, Welcome to episode 549 of Salcedo Paranormal, and tonight I'm talking about haunted places in the U.S. That's funny. I got a little bit distracted there, apparently, and, So tonight, again, like I said, talking about haunted places in the U.S., as always, you can find all episodes of the show, along with links to social media and other ways to contact me, at the podcast page. And that is salcedoparanormal.podbean.com. That's S-A-L-S-I-D-O, paranormal.podbean.com. Always happy to hear from you all, whether you have comments or questions or topic suggestions, or stories of paranormal experiences, whether they're your own or from others that you trust. Happy to either read those or have you join me on the show to talk about them. Thank you all for listening, whether you are here for the live streams on Discord, or if you listen to the podcast or YouTube feeds, or to the Trouble Minds Radio Network, KUAP, Digital Broadcasting. There you can hear replays of two episodes of the show every night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, right before Trouble Minds Radio comes on. As always, I want to thank Michael Strange, host of Trouble Minds Radio, as well as Liam Martin, host of the Exiled Minds podcast, for producing these shows and putting them up on the station, as you hear them there with the music at the beginning and end of every episode. If you'd like to support the show, there are some different ways to do that. You can always share the show with others and rate and review it on your favorite podcast platform. You can also find an extra episode of True Paranormal Stories from the Web every month over on my Patreon page. You can get that by signing up to any of the paid membership tier levels there. Or you can always make one-time donations through PayPal. Help is never expected, but always appreciated, as there are expenses in making these shows, from equipment to research materials to travel expenses in some cases. So I was distracted there because I sort of did these shows out of order. But that's okay. That's how it worked. So this is going to be talking about another one of those haunted places in Alabama. So I have a couple articles here, and I'll put those in the episode description. Again, for this series of these shows, a couple of things I want to always point out at the beginning of these episodes. If any of these places sound interesting to you and you'd like to check them out, please do your research online and see when you are allowed to sort of to do that, what their visitor hours are, just what's going on there as of whenever you want to go, because these articles that I always share, they're from one point in time, and things may change from between that time and then whenever you hear these shows and you decide to go to any of these locations. Not all of them will always be open to the public, or some will be open only at certain times. So, again, just please respect everyone's privacy. And also, just for safety reasons as well, make sure you go to these places and only as people are supposed to, just to stay safe. And, again, just respect the properties and the people there as well. So that's sort of the disclaimer for all these episodes here I want to always put out. Because places, especially if they're sort of, they've been there for a long time, they can start to, the buildings and everything can start to become broken down. And that can be, that can lead to possible injuries if you try to go there and either no one is aware that you're there, or any number of situations like that can happen. So last time we talked about the Sloss Furnaces, and again, that was sort of a review. This next one is a place called the Sturtevant Hall, and this is in Selma, Alabama. I have a couple of tabs here. I got to close my browser. There we go. This first article I found is from hauntedhouses.com, And the title of the article reads, let's see if I can get to the title. Okay, so it just reads Sturdivant Hall. So let's see here. There's like a subtitle here. It says, signs of spirit resonance appear in ways that they find amusing. A man that is there who had legal trouble is still a master there. Spirit, basically. That's the point there. The back house is a special hangout. So that's where a lot of the spirits are said to stay there. Now, this is actually the Sturdivant Hall House Museum. It's also known as the Watts Parksman and Gilman Townhouse. So that's according to the article here. It's a Greek Revival masterpiece, according to the article here. And so Sturdivant Hall is a very good example, it says, of antebellum neoclassical townhouse. And let me see here. So the front of the building, that's a rectangular building, two-story. And the front has a 60-foot-wide front porch on each floor with six equally spaced 30-foot-high columns in the front of it, basically. So let me see here. Apparently, this structure is made out of bricks with stucco added to give the appearance of being made finely dressed stone, known as, ashlar masonry. So, and then here's just describing the place itself. On each floor, there are four windows with shutters and small hinged panels beneath the windows. From the sill to the floor. And those apparently allow the windows to function as doors as well. Sort of an air conditioning system used long before modern air conditioning systems were around. So it says the second floor has an intricate iron grill railing across the front of it. So, and let me see here. Looking at more of the article here, talks about in the back of the townhouse, there's a smaller porch with two columns and an upstairs porch. So it's going into a lot of the explanation of what the place looks like. It's on the National Register of Historic Places, and it's been there on that registry since June 29th of 1972. So, as far as the interior goes, it says that both upstairs and down, there's a T-shaped hall that divides the arrangement of the rooms. And there's a center hall that runs the full length of the midsection. And the left side is cut in half by another hallway. So there's a large drawing room that's 20 by 30 feet, apparently, on the first floor. And across the hall in the front, there's a parlor that's separated from the dining hall by a large opening with a freestanding column on either side. There's a staircase that it has a straight staircase. And let me see here. That's the rest of that. There is a spiral staircase that connects the second floor with the cupola. And this staircase was constructed around a central core post that extends the entire height of the stairwell. And around it, the treads go around that. So spiral staircases, they're amazing to look at, but I do not like trying to go up or down. Well, up is not as bad. Down is terrifying. I've only done that once as far as a major, like, open staircase, and I'll never do that again if I can help it. But this Sturdivant Hall has been renovated and is furnished with a lot of antiques of the period. And it looks like the family just went out, it says, for a stroll. So as it truly is a step back in time. So let me get to the... apparently there are other buildings included in the area, including a gift shop and others that are probably used for storage. This article does have pictures, so I definitely recommend checking it out. And as far as the history goes, the first two owners of the property didn't get to stay there for very long, as the circumstances interrupted their lives, it says, forcing them to sell way before they were ready to go. The hall was built by a Colonel Edward Watts, who had hired Thomas Helm Lee to design and construct this townhouse, starting in 1852 and finally finishing in 1856, at a cost of almost $70,000, and that is at that time, so that's quite a bit of money. And says that only the best craftsmen would do, basically, and people were brought over from Italy to work on the imported Italian marble and plaster details that were found in the property. So Colonel Watts and his family moved in, but only got to live there until 1864. Of course, that is right during the Civil War there, near the end of that. Talks about seeing the writing on the wall that the South was going to lose the Civil War, as I just mentioned there. Watts said that sold the property and moved his family to Texas, which is a place that was he thought was safer to live in at the time. So during the Southern Reconstruction years after the Civil War, this area was under Union military rule, says, which was naturally resented by the residents there. So next owner, I believe, is John Parkman, who was in the banking business in Selma. And through his work, he was promoted up to the ladder of, up the ladder of success. So let's see here. Parkman had just been made president of First National Bank of Selma at the age of 29, and he bought the Sturtevant Hall from Watts on February 12th, 1864, for $65,000 to be the family's home. Right after becoming bank president, Parkman, along with other bankers in the community, basically kept on going with their business. And I'm just going to... Now, apparently, at some point, in 1866, I guess, this investment in cotton that they made was a total disaster. At that point, John Parkman lost his own fortune, and he was also accused of embezzling funds and arrested after the governor found out about the bad investment. So, and that is when federal forces took possession of the bank there. So Parkman was held at the county jail in 1866 while waiting for his military trial, just 2 years after moving into Sturtevant Hall. So let's see here. And a lot of people thought that he would not have a fair trial. And so let's see here. Going from that, there's a lot more history here, but like I said, that's sort of, don't want to go too into that. Apparently the next group that moved in was the Gilman family, and they made the famous townhouse their home and owned it until 1957, when the family there eventually sold the house to the city of Selma for $75,000. So, going into the history of the paranormal activity there, it talks about when people are accused of something that they didn't do, it says in the article here, and pass before they can clear their names, their spirits may stay around trying to clear their names still, and are not able to rest until they do. And that is apparently part of why believed to be the source of some of the activity there. There was a bed and breakfast there that, let me see here. I'm looking at this. Huh. This doesn't make sense. But, so there's a spirit of, that is there that is still upset that her death was ruled, basically a suicide by the Catholic Church and, not murder. And so her remains are buried outside the cemetery and not with her husband and son. And so she wants her name cleared. I thought that was going to have to do with the banker. But so she's still apparently seen there. Let me see here. Looking at... So they're just talking about... Okay. So now they're going into places, other places here. I don't know why they do that. But just, I guess, to talk about how other cases, this is something that happened where spirits that were wrongly accused of things in life would still remain after they had passed. So, moving on to the actual hauntings in this location, says the spirits that reside or visit there feel very comfortable to act like themselves. And they even let the staff and visitors know that they are present, and sometimes they express themselves at the expense of the living. So, let's see here. Looking at the rest of this article here. So, the spirits that remain there are not shy about interacting with people, so that's amazing. Looking at the rest of this here. Apparently on the museum's video that plays on their website, one of the staff there tells them that because of the spirit of John Parkman, many visitors come to speak with him, possibly including some paranormal investigators. He's the kind of spirit, it says, who would be front and center in any investigation, letting them know he's still there because his name hasn't been cleared of wrongdoing. So there was a paranormal research team that recently did an investigation there and caught evidence of spirit activity, mostly on the second floor. So let me see here. There's at least three known spirits, supposedly, that are there. And there may be, let's see here. There may be also the wife of John Parkman, or a spirit of a loyal servant residing there, as some unknown spirit opens up the shutters and the windows in the morning. A job that a servant would do, apparently. It says that one can understand why John Parkman is restless. Let me see here. So I'm looking at the the rest of this article here. So, yeah, they don't go into a lot of the details about what happens there. But, so, let me see here. So, yeah, that's basically it. They're apparently just scenes. People have been sensed and seen these different apparitions. So, a lot of times I feel like when these articles are made, if there's just a lot of evidence, then everything sort of gets summarized and there's not a lot of examples given. Or it could be the opposite. So that's always hard to tell. But yeah, let me see here. Looking at the chat here. So looking at the chat, DG in the chat says, true, I hate going on a podcast and have me look for part two. But yeah, and then a glass spiral staircase made me cry. I had to go by elevator. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's the way that the stairs are just not even, and I can't, man, a glass spiral staircase? No, thank you. I would not want to even, that's worse than a regular one to me. Yeah, so anyway, so that was the first article here. And again, with these shows, I always like to include an article from a sort of a paranormal theme website, and then a more like a mainstream media website. This is other article here is from WSFA.com, WSFA12, and the article here, the title here says, "The Ghost That Lives in Sturtevant Hall in Selma," and so talks about how the place is very well known for its architecture, as was described in that first article there. And apparently there is another feature that is always rarely seen, but always present. So again, going back to that feeling or a sense of others being there, even though no one is seen. But apparently, let me see here. Ann Thomas, it says, guides tours through the hall on a regular basis. And she says that a lot of people from all over the world come to see, again, due to the architecture. Excuse me. But says that goes over the fact that there's a lot of furniture in there, antiques from way back when. And apparently, one of the people that worked there was an intern, said that they had a door that was locked, fly open for no apparent reason. And they think it was the spirit of Mr. John Parkman. So let's see here. So it says you can stop by the location, but again, I definitely recommend checking out more current information. I don't know exactly when this article came out, but a lot of just apparently sensing things and attributing them to the people that used to live there. And I always wonder again with that, is it sort of a psychic thing, information that is being sent from the spirits that are there to the people that visit the place or work in the place? Or is it sort of just thinking that because of the history, if there is any activity there, it must be the people that were living there? And again, that's a possibility, but it's also always possible it's not who people think it is. It's always hard to tell. There can be things that happen. I've heard of this too, where there'll only be one thing that happens in a location, one door opening, like in that story there, where it's just that one door opening. Nothing else really happens. And so you have to wonder, is that someone just passing through? Or is that some energy that just happens to be, again, passing through and causes that one thing to happen that one time? Even if it happens a few times, if it's just one thing, it could be possibly explained away. So, yeah, that covers that location. And we'll go into more of these locations again on future shows in this series, and go from there. That'll be next week. So thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you all in the next episode of Salcedo Paranormal. Take care.